Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Chav Zayin Amud Bet. Yesterday we left off with the limud regards to the pasuk by Maaser Sheni that we had a klal uprat to klal, or we had a riboy meal to riboy. Even within the limud of klal uprat to klal, we had two opinions as to how the klal uprat to klal worked. There was one braita that suggested that the klal uprat to klal, which is enodan ke'ela ke'in haprat, Klal uprat to klal teaches you that you include anything that has the common denominators of the pratim. One braita told us the common denominator of the pratim was pri mi pri. It gives birth or it reproduces. It's able to sustain itself. And gidule karka. It grows from the ground or sustained from the ground. We had an alternate braita that said the klal uprat to klal was that it was blood, which is the same as pri mi pri, and also that it was vladot ha'aretz. Vladot ha'aretz means that it was created from the land. So the Gemara wanted to know, ma beinayu, what's the difference between these two, klalim, pratim, uklalim? What is the difference between them? So Baye made the first suggestion, that dagim, ike beinayu, that fish were the nafkamina between them, because the one who says mi pri, vigdule karka, the dagim qualify, they can reproduce. And they are gdule karka, they grow from the ground, they're sustained from the ground. So that would be yes. Whereas according to the one who says that they are vlad vladot haaretz, then they do have vlad vladot, but they're not created from the land, they were created from the water. So that would be the nafkamina between them. Then the Gemara says, Humi amar abaye, it's the last line, or chavzayin amud bet, dagim gdule karka ninhu. Can you really say that fish are classified as gdule karka, which means that they are sustained from the ground, which would qualify or classify them as something that is min ha'aretz? The reason that we can't say that is because v'amar abaye. Didn't abaye say, akal putita. One eats a young eel, Rashi calls it sheretz ha'maim katan, a small water animal, that's called a sheretz. As Rashi defines, a sheretz is davar shunad ba'aretz, something that crawls along the ground. Ve'eno nira, it's not visible, Ela ayidei shirutzo v'richusho, because of its movement. That's what caused it to be visible, because of its movement, mipnei kotno, because it's so small. There's something in the water that moves in the water, very small, creepy, crawly thing. Here, it's achal putito. He ate one of those water shratzim. Luke arba, he gets four sets of makot. Nimala, on the other hand, if he eats an ant, there he's luke chamesh. He gets five sets of makot. Tzira, if he eats a wasp, then he's lokeh sheish, he gets six sets of makot. Now, first of all, even though these items are less than the minimum shi'ur that one would be required to violate an isur in the Torah, which is a kezayit, nevertheless, since they are what we call a birya, full entity, therefore, if you eat them, you are chayav because you ate the entire entity, and that makes it chashuv, it's a davar chashuv, despite the fact that it is below the size of a kezayit. The reason that we have these different sets of malkot is because the psukim deal with different shretzim. They're what we call shretzei hamayim. Then there are what we call shretzei haaretz. And then there are shretzei haof. And they have a different enumeration of malkot. The shretzei hamayim have a pasuk that's found in Parshat Shmini. It's this week's parsha. Most of these psukim that we're going to speak about are in this week's parsha. So it says here in Vayikra Yud Aleph, pasuk Yud Aleph, Sheketz yudachem, mibsaram lo tochelu, ve'et nivlatam tishaketsu. So over there, there's a restriction, mibsaram lo tochelu, that you may not eat them. The pasuk before says, v'lasher ein lo snapir ve'kaskeset bayamim benachalim kol sheretz hamayim, kol nevesh chaya asher b'mayim sheketz heim lachem. So here we're talking about a sheretz hamayim, and there is an isur min haTorah to eat them, which is mibsaram lo tochelu. So that's the first of the isurim for sheretz Hamayim. There's a pasuk later on in that perek in pasuk mem gimel that says al tishaktsu et nafsho techem bechol asheretz hashoretz, and then the end of the pasuk is veloti tamu behem vinim tmeitem bam. So contained within this pasuk is two isurim, and these two isurim are generic. It doesn't mention or classify which type of sheretz we're talking about. It says al tishaktsu et nafsho techem bechol asheretz hashoretz. Period. That's one isur. And secondly, Isur is alot to tamu behem and it's made them bam. So that gives you two more isurim with regards to the eating of a sheretz, no matter whether it's a sheretz hamayim, sheretz arz, or sheretz of. So now we're up to three for sheretz hamayim. Then we have one more isur, which is found in Parshat Re'eh, which is in Dvarim Yudalid in Pasuk Yud, whereas the other parsha that deals with Kashrut, there it says, in Pasuk Yud, Kol Asher Inlo Snapir V'Kaskeset Lo Tochelu Tamehu Lechem. The Lo Tochelu gives you the fourth Isur for Shratzei HaMayim, and that's why if you eat a putita, you're chayav four sets of makot, because these are the four Isurim. For a Nimala, which is a Sheretz Haaretz, the Usurim are really all together. In Parshat Shmini, in Pasuk Mem Aleph, it says, Chosheretz Hashoretz Al Haaretz, Sheketu Lo Yeachel. So here's one Isur for Sheretz Haaretz. Then we have Pasuk Mem Bet, which is, Ko Holeich Al Gachon. B'chol oleich al arba, ad kol marbe regalayim, kol asheretz, hasheretz aretz, lo tuchlum, ki sheketzein. That's the second Isur. And then we have Mem Gimel, which is the generic Isurim that we read before, which gives you an additional two. Al teshaksu et nafshotechem b'chol asheretz hasheretz, v'lo titamu b'hem nitamitim bam. That gives you four Isurim. And the fifth Isur is in Pasuk Mem Dalet, which is ki ani Hashem elokeichem, v'it kadishtem, v'item kedoshim ki kadosh ani, ולא תתאמו את נפשותיכם בכל השרץ הרומס על הארץ. So that gives you five Isurim with regards to שרץ הארץ. And that's why it says here, אכל נמלה ילוקה חמש. By האוף, by שרץ האוף, שרץ האוף is really a combination of a שרץ הארץ plus. Because it does all the things that the שרץ הארץ does. Plus, it also flies. It also takes off. So therefore, you'll have the same five that we just enumerated with regards to the Nimala, plus you'll have one additional Sheretz Ha'Of, which is found in Parshat Re'eh again, Sefer Devarim, Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Yutet, V'chol Sheretz Ha'Of, Tamehu Lachem, Lo Ye'achelu. So that additional Isur for Sheretz Ha'Of makes it that Sheretz Ha'Of will get six sets of Malkot, and that's why we say here that Tzira gets six sets of Malkot. There is one other pasuk found in Parshat Kedoshim, the end of Perek Chaf in Parshat Kedoshim. Both Rashi and Tosafot over here deal with it because that would add an additional isur that is not enumerated here. There the pasuk says, "Vivdem ben habehema hatehura latmeya ben ofa tamei latohor velo tishaksu et nafshotechem babehema baof ubechol asher tirmos haadama." So what happened to that Isur? Here the Gemara does not enumerate that as amongst the Isurim, because then it would add an additional Isur to all of these items. So Rashi claims the reason is that that Pasuk is only speaking about of larger sizes. Even though it uses the term Tirmos, it doesn't mean like a Sheretz, and that's where the description that I gave you before that he gives for Sheretz comes up, and he says, that pasuk is talking about larger animals, not smaller animals. Tosafot disagrees. It's based on the Gemara in Mi'ilah. There he also disagrees with Rashi about this pasuk, that the Rav Yaakov Mi'Orleans says that that pasuk is speaking about only the Chet Shratzim, the eight Shratzim, so that you asked about before. But that pasuk, when it says, Lo Tishaksu et Nafshotechem, that is only true by the Chet Shratzim, because over here the pasuk talks about the differentiating between the Tohor and the Tamei. Asher yivdalti lachem l'tamei. And the only Shratzim that are Tmeim are the Chet Shratzim. And therefore, that Pasuk is specifically designated for the Chet Shratzim and not for Shratzim in general. And that's why it's not included in the count here. Now, the reason that we brought this up is because Abaye said before that a dog would be considered as Gedulei Karka. Now, if a dog is considered as gedulei karka, why, if you eat a potita, if you eat some sheretz hamayim, are you only chayav for four sets of malkot? Because you use the sukima sheretz hamayim, it should get all the malkot that are also associated with sheretz haaretz. The fact that it only gives it malkot for sheretz hamayim and not sheretz haaretz shows you that there is a distinction between gedulei hamayim and gedulei hakarka. And based on that, the Gemara rejects Abaye's suggestion that the dog is the nafkamina between these two, because even according to the one who says gedulei karka, those items that are found in the water are not considered to be gedulei karka. And we see that by this distinction, the sets of makot that you get for the different shvatzim. That's what the Gemara says here. Vim ita putita, if that was the case, the putita, the sheretz hamayim, nami luke mishum sheretz ha-sheretz al-aretz. It should also get makot for Sheretz HaShreitz El Haaretz, because it's considered to be Gedulei Karka. Ela Amar Ravina, Ofot Igemen Hayu. Ravina says the nafkamina between them is actually birds. The Manda Amar Pri Mi Pri Gedulei Karka. So if you're talking about that they self-perpetuate and they grow from the ground, Hani Name Gedulei Karka Ninu. They grow from the ground. They sustain themselves from the ground or items that grow on the ground. The Madamar Vlad Vladot Haaretz Hani Ofot Min Harakak Nivru'u. The birds were created from a mixture of water and earth. They were born or created of not just the Aretz, but Mayim and Aretz. And since they are not the sole product or creation of the Aretz, they're not considered to be created from the Aretz. As opposed to the animals that are created min Aretz, the Dagim that are created from the Mayim, you have the birds that are created from a combination of Aretz and Mayim. Therefore, they don't qualify to be called the creation of the land because they're not solely from the land. So, man dimirabe ofot maitame. Man dimayit ofot maitame. So, the Gemara accepts ofot as being the distinction between the two klalei pratim or kolim. But the question is, why? What drove them to learn one way or the other? We have a klal prato klal. How do you determine what is the common denominator between the four items that are enumerated in the pasuk that gets you to this category that's either inclusive or exclusive here of the ofot? So what brings you this? So this is very interesting. The Gemara says, man demrabe ofot tasavar. The one who included the ofot thinks. If you think of a klal prato klal is made up of component parts. It has a klal, a prat, and a klal. We know from the 13 midot of Rabbi Yishmael that a klal, prat, to klal, there are also smaller formations of this, which is either a klal uprat or a prat uklal. A klal uprat, the din is that the prat narrows the klal. If you have a general principle, and then you have something that is of specific nature, then the specific nature governs what was said in the klal. That's called a klal uprat. The klal uprat, ein b'klal al mashu b'prat. The klal now becomes narrowed by the prat. There's also a prat uklal. So a prat uklal has a din that the klal includes something beyond the prat. It's more inclusive. So now when I get to a klal uprat uklal, what did I start with and what did I add? You have two possibilities. I either started with a klal uprat and then I added another klal at the end and that's what made it into a klal uprat uklal, or the other way around. I started with a prat uklal and then I added the klal in the front. So depending where you start from, the extra klal will actually be more inclusive or less inclusive. And that's what the Gemara is about to say now. So mandam rabbi ofot kasever klala batra davka. He thinks that the latter klal is the real klal here. So that means pratu klal. The original formulation was a pratu klal, which is nase klal, mosef ala prat. That pratu klal, the klal comes to include everything in that case. And then, ahane klali kama limu'ute. The first klal comes and narrows down the definition here. Anything that's not common denominator from two perspectives, from two characteristics. So he starts with a prat uklal. You have a prat, which is a specific item, and then you have a klal afterwards. A prat uklal is that you include everything, or it's very expansive in its inclusionary nature. But then you added a klal in the front. The klal in the front now narrows it down to say that you only don ke'ein ha-prat, similar to that prat in the middle, to the category in the middle. But since we started from a very, very inclusive stance, and now we brought the first klal to narrow it, the narrowing is going to be of a smaller nature, which means that we only demand that the category formed by the middle, kein haprat, have two things in common, or two characteristics in common. And that would be primipri and dulei karka. So because of that, you can include ofot. On the other hand, the person or the bright that suggests that excludes birds, kasavar, klala kama dafka, that you start out with the first klal as being the underlying part or component here, klal uprat. When you start, klal uprat, ein b'klal elamashu b'prat, that the klal, the general principle now is narrowed by what is found in the prat. The prat is a limiting of the klal. Then, hane in, midi achrin alo, that comes to teach you that the prat only things that are enumerated there are yes, anything else is no. Vahane klal ebatro, then you add on the latter klal, liribuye kol dedami le mishloshet tzadim. Since here you started out from a much more narrow perspective, and then you added the klal at the end to be inclusive, that inclusionary nature is much more limited. So how do we make it more limited? We demand that you have more things in common with the pratim in the middle. We believe that you need three character traits that are similar to the category in order to be included. What are those three? That's pre-mi-pri, gedule karka, plus that vavledot aretz, that you're created from the aretz, you're created from the land. So depending on what you think is the buildup of the klal u'prat u'klal, you'll end up with a different attitude or perspective towards klal u'prat u'klal. If you think you start with a more expansive view, which is prat u'klal, which would include everything, then when you add the later klal, it's narrowing. But it's going to narrow in a much more limited way, and that means that you only need two character traits in common with the list of pratim in order to be included. On the other hand, if you think we started out with a klal u'prat, where the prat narrows the klal, and then you have the latter klal come and be more expansive or inclusionary, there we're going to limit the inclusion. How do we limit the inclusion? We make a demand for more common denominators, make a demand for more common character traits, and there we'll demand three common character traits between them, and that's why you have a difference in the opinions about how this klal u'prat u'klal works over here. Tosafot does ask that in other places in Shas that we have that a klal u'prat u'klal, when the Gemara makes this distinction, says that you only need something that has one zad in common, and then the other side is two tzadim. So what Tosafot concludes here is that the numbers 2 and 3 can be equivalent to the 1 and 2. The difference being, what's the level of the prat? The character trait, is it a character trait that is considered to be chashuv, something that's important, kind of a denominator between these items? Or is it a character trait that they call garua, something that is less of an important character trait that is common between them? So for instance, in our case over here, pre-mi-pri and gedule karka are of a similar nature. That character trait is something that is inherent to these four items, and that's something that would be considered as if one, because you can't differentiate between them, they're on the same level. On the other hand, to say that it's created from the ground, that's what he calls a character trait that is garua, because, okay, they were once created from the ground. That is a common character trait between them, but that's not something on an ongoing basis that is really a common denominator between them. And therefore, it's of a lower nature of a character trait. So that would be in the other category of things that you don't need to worry about. Whereas for the one who says that the klal u'prat u'klal is built of a klal u'prat and then a klal afterwards, he says you need to include even character traits that are garua. And in this case, that would be created from the ground. So that would be the difference here. It's not necessarily the number of 2 and 3, because in other places it's 1 and 2 is the difference. The difference being the type of common character trait that we're looking for. We're looking for either things that are on the same level of character trait. They are something that you would consider to be of a similar importance of character trait between them, and things that are of a lesser importance. The one who says that it's more inclusive says you only worry about the character traits that are on the same level that are important. The one who says it's less inclusive says you even worry about the common denominator of character traits that are less important. Right now we're going to move on to a little class in botany, which is the Gemara wants to know what you can use for an eruv. So we saw in the Mishnah that you can use anything besides mayim v'melach. Now the Gemara is going to discuss other possibilities, which is Amar Yehuda Mishmeder of Shmuel Bar Shilat, Mishmeder Rav, Mi'arvin. One is allowed to make an eruv with Befapuin, which are garden kraut or cress, or type of cress, Ubechlag Logot, which are purslane, Ubegud Gadniot, which are midliot, or a species of clover or coriander, Avalo Bechaziz, not with chaziz, which is lichen or animal feed that comes from less than developed or fully ripened hay, and lo bekafniyot, and not with unripened dates. So here you have three items in the beginning that are permissible to be used for eruv, and two items that are impermissible to be used. Both of them are items that are not fully grown, that are unripe. And they cannot be used because they would not be considered to be food items because they are unripe in nature. Now the Gemara wants to understand, Uve good gadaniyot mi me'arvin. Are you really allowed to use these good gadaniyot, which again were these melilot or the species of clover or coriander? Are you allowed to use that for your eruv? Vahatanya. Don't we have a brayta? Good gadaniyot mirubei banim yochlu. If someone has a lot of children, they can eat it. Chasuchei banim. Someone who doesn't have a lot of children, lo yochlu, he should not eat it. The reason being that it is mima'it de zera. It reduces the semen of the individual, and therefore someone who already has a lot of children, it will not be impactful to them. Where someone who has few children and is trying to have more children shouldn't eat it, because this could cause him problems in his reproduction. They have already hardened where they are now used for their seed. And then even someone who has a lot of children should not eat it. I mean that they became hardened, that it became like a wood, and then it becomes for the seed. You're using it for the seed, not for its quality as a vegetable. So now the Gemara wants to understand here. Well, if that's the case, then how could we be using these good ganiyot as an eruv? So targama, so you can explain it. Ashlohukshu lezera. That the case is here that we said that good ganiyot according to Rav are good to use for an eruv is in a case where they haven't hardened yet. They haven't turned into a woody substance yet. Umirubei banim. And it's talking about someone who has a lot of children. For him, where it's permissible to eat it, that could be the one who's using it for an eruv. Vi bai deima. And some say it leulam lechasuchei banim. It's even if someone doesn't have a lot of children. Dachachazul lemerubei banim. Because the fact that someone else could use it is enough to make it a kasher eruv. Milotznan. Our Mishnah says me'arvin lenazir biyayin leYisrael b'truma. You can use wine for a nazir even though he can't drink it because someone else can drink it. You can use truma for the Israel even though he can't eat it because the kohen can't eat it. So same thing over here. You can use these good ganiyot for someone who's a chasuchei banim, because a merubei banim could eat it. Alma, afa gav delo chazi lahai, chazi lahai. So even though it's not useful for you or you can't eat it, as long as someone could eat it, that's enough. Vi vayitema. And there are others that want to suggest, ki kama Rav, when Rav said this, he said this behan dakukei madaye. He's talking about good ganiyot from median good ganiyot, because those were different in nature, and because of that, they were edible or they were not problematic for someone to consume. And that's what he was speaking about here. That's why they were good for the Eruv. Now the Gemara moves on to the next thing in Rav's statement, which is Chaziz. B'chaziz lo, with this immature hay, you cannot make an Eruv. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Shot v'chaziz me'arvin behen. Now Kishot, most people translate it as hops, although the other translation of kshot is kuskuta, and it's probably more likely to be the kuskuta we'll see later on from the Gemara, because the kuskuta is a classification of vegetation that does not have chlorophyll in it, doesn't have a greenness to it, and doesn't have roots or deep roots to it. And we'll see later on in the Gemara that that actually comes up as being one of the definitions of kshot over here. So this kashot is either hapsu de kuskuta, v'chaziz, which is what we're after, mi'arvin behen. You're allowed to use them for an eruv. Umivarchim alehem borei pri adama. And the bracha for them is borei pri adama, meaning that they are edible, and they must be what we call fully developed, because you're making a bracha borei pri adama on them. If they were raw, or if they were something not fully developed, you'd make a shahakol on them. The fact that you're making a borei pri adama on them already makes them, or classifies them, as a food substance. So if that's the case, sounds like you can use chaziz for the eruv. Why did Rav say before you cannot use chaziz for the eruv? Slokash amikami da'at the Rav the Bavel. How the batter da'at the Rav the Bavel. One time, or one statement was before Rav reached Bavel. The other statement was after Rav reached Bavel. Rav weren't originally in Eretz Yisrael. He was a Talmud of Rabbi in Eretz Yisrael. And then he later goes to Bavel and becomes the tremendous Rav that we know. Rav, who is basically the leader of Bavel, the Talmud Chacham that makes Bavel into a Makom HaTorah. So Rav, before he went to Bavel, believed that Chaziz was not a food item and not a food substance. Once he reaches Bavel and he sees that in Bavel, they eat it. They eat Chaziz, and Chaziz is considered to be a food substance. Then he changed his mind and says that you could use Chaziz for and a roof. It's interesting because in both cases it's Amar Rav Yehuda, Mishmei Derav Shmuel Bar Shilat, Mishmei Derav. In the other case it's Amar Rav Yehuda, Mishmei Derav. The question is, if Rav Yehuda heard it both times, Rav Yehuda learned by Rav in Bavel, not in Eretz Yisrael. So it has to be, I guess, that at some point that Mesorah from Rav came from Eretz Yisrael, where it was Chaziz no, whereas the Mesorah that Chaziz yes came once Rav had reached Bavel. Gemara asks the question, okay, just because he got to Bavel and they saw that they ate it there, then why does that dictate that it's food? Ubavel ruba da'alma? Since when is Bavel the rov ha'olam? There should be betela datan eitzel kol adam. They're a minority of the world that eats it. But we'll say that most of the world doesn't eat it, and therefore what should govern is what most of the world does, not what the people in Bavel do. Why should what the people in Bavel do have any impact on the halacha if the majority of people in the world do not eat it? And in other instances, we had this in the Gemara in Shabbat, Tosafot points out the distinction that he made in the Gemara in Shabbat, that sometimes we say that even though somebody is not Rov HaOlam, they can still govern the protocol for such an item. For instance, when we had Din with regards to Rimonim in the Gemara in Shabbat, as well as we had a Din with regards to Gemalim, the thorns that the food uses. So whether people do Shechita with Rimonim, and the Gemalim, whether they eat thorns. So the Gemara there says that in Arabia, they grow thorns for the camels, they feed it to the camels. And it says that by regards to Rimonim, there was Bei Menashia, who used to do Shechita, because they were growers of Rimonim, they had so many Rimonim that they used to squeeze it for its juice. So the Gemara there says, Bei Menashia Ruba the Alma, and the Gemara says, Bei Menashia have no impact, because it's one family. On the other hand, by the Arabia, the Gemara says, because that's what they do in Arabia, therefore it dictates. The Tosfot over there distinguishes between these two, and says that if you have a large number of people doing something, and they do it because of the specific circumstances they find themselves in. For instance, in Arabia, where they have a lot of camels, that's what they use for feed for camels. Now, in the rest of the world, they don't grow these thorns because they don't have camels. But if you had camels in other places in the world, you would act like the people in Arabia. Therefore, the people in Arabia impact the halacha. Even though they're not Rov HaOlam, because of their behavior is dictated or governed by the fact that they have lots of camels, that would impact others, not because that's what they do, but because if they had camels, they would act the same way as the people in Arabia. So that's true when you have a whole city or a whole area that does it, like Arabia. On the other hand, with Bei Menashia, where they did this with Rimonim, it's true that if everybody in the world had a lot of Rimonim, they would act the same way as this family. But since it's only one family, they can't dictate for the rest of the world what the halacha will be. So now over here, how come the Gemara doesn't accept it? Bavel is a large swath, right? A large area. And so maybe they should also govern. I mean that if everybody had chaziz like they do in Bavel, then they would eat it. The truth is that they have chaziz everywhere. And that's why Bavel here doesn't dictate. Chaziz is not unique to Bavel. There's chaziz everywhere. It's just the people in Bavel eat it, and people other places don't eat it. And because of that, Bavel doesn't have impact on halacha or can't change the halachic process. And that's why the Gemara here is different than the Gemara in Shabbat, because over here, everybody has access to the chaziz, yet only the people in Bavel eat it, and that's why they don't make an impact on halacha. Gemara says, Vatanya, don't we have a brayta, pool, the beans, legumes, vasi'ura, barley, vaha tiltan, fenugreek, shezar'an the yerek, if you grew them for their vegetable properties, betela dato, etzel kol adam. Then we disregard what you're thinking, because people don't grow these items for as vegetables. So if you grew them, betela etzel kol adam, lefikach, and therefore if you planted them, zara'an, chayav, yerakan, and patur. If you grow them, in terms of maser and shumot, when you harvest them, their seeds, which is what the main purpose people grow them for, would be chayav and shumot and maserot. And the yerek, the vegetable, or the leaves, would not be chayav in Chumah Masir, because they would say, B'teila dato etzel kol adam. Even though he intended for the greens, nevertheless, it doesn't matter because nobody else plants it for that reason. B'teila dato etzel kol adam. On the other hand, Hashiklayim, which is either cress or pepperwort, Vagargir, which is garden rocket, Shizar'an the yerek, if they're planted for their greens, they're planted for their vegetables, Mitasrim yerek v'zera. Then you take off maser, both for the yerek, for the vegetation, and the zera when it dries out for the seed. Zeran the zera, if you planted them for their seeds, mitasrim zera v'yerek. Then you also take off maser for the zera for the seeds and the yerek. Those are S. Okay, the halacha is the same. That whether you plant it for yerek or zera, you take off maser from both of them. So why didn't the Mishnah just combine them into one? So he says, well, there is a difference. In the first case, when you plant it for the yerek, then you take off maser for yerek and zera. On the other hand, when you plant it for zera, you take off zera and yerek. The difference in the order tells you that there's actually a difference between these items of what is considered to be the primary item over here. And whatever is the primary item will dictate the time for maser. Vegetables, when they're harvested, that's when the maser is taken off. It goes batar l'kita. When you pick the vegetables, that's when they become chayav and maser. So if you grew it for vegetables as vegetables, then that's when you will become chayav and maser, even though the zera is included. On the other hand, if you plant it for zera, you'll become chayav in maser based on whether it grows like a shlish or other categories, there are other definitions of thresholds for when maaser comes in, but it'll be governed by zera. That's number one. Number two is whether you can take off maaser one from the other. If one's considered to be the ikar and one the tefel, one becomes yafeh and the other one becomes ra'ah. And therefore you can't be maaser mina yafeh ala ra'ah or mina ra'ah ala yafeh. And because of that, there'll be a distinction between them. Even though in both cases you'll take off both from the zera and the yerek, there will be a differentiation in whether you planted it for yerek or zera. But the reason that the Gemara brought this is for the first part of the Braita, which is that those three items, if a person plants them, even though he intends for Yerek, we don't care what he thinks. We don't consider what he thinks. It's Betela Dato, it's Oko Adam. Same thing here in Bavel. Just because the Babylonians eat Chaziz, why should that change the Aloha with regards to Chaziz? It should be Betela Datan, it's Oko Adam. And therefore, it should not be considered Ochel, and you shouldn't make a Bruch of a Borei Pri Adama. So what was Rav doing? Where it says, Ki kamarav bidag nunaita. It's talking about things that grow in the garden. The chaziz of the garden. Not that which grows out in the fields, but rather that which grows in your backyard in the garden, that everybody eats that. Even outside of Bavel, they eat that. So that'll be the difference here. The chaziz that we say is no good for Eruv, and you would make a shahakol, that is chaziz of the field. The chaziz that we say that you can use for an Eruv, and you do make a bari pri adama on it, that's the chaziz of the gina, of the garden. So now Gemara says, zera gargir, just goes on to a diversion here. The Braita mentioned the gargir, which was the garden rocket. It says there that the garden rocket has a seed. Gemara wants to know, what do you do with the seeds of the garden rocket? The maichazi. What's it useful for here that they say you're taking off maiser and that you're eating it? Am Rabbi Yochanan, shukein rishonim, shelo yayu lehen pilpulin. The earlier generations who did not have pepper, shochakinotan, they grind them down, they mill them, umatbilim bo etetzli, and they dip their roasted meat in it. So it was a pepper substitute. So they used this garden rocket seed, they used to grind it down like a peppercorn, and they would use it as a substitute for pepper. And that's why it has a status of ochel, and it has a requirement for maaser to be removed from it. Rabbi Zeira Kiavi Chalish Girsay, when he used to become worn down, tired from reviewing his Gemara, remember he was doing a Baal Peh, he couldn't hold cup anymore, he wasn't able to review any more Baal Peh. So he says, I may as well do something where I'll get a mitzvah of Azav Yatev Apitcha de Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ami. He used to go to the doorway of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ami's Beit Midrash, Amar, Kinafki Vali Rabbanon. When the Rabbanon go in and out, Ifu Mikamayu, I'll stand up for them, Akabel Behu Agron, I'll just get some schar for doing vod, Amidei Chachamim. So he wasn't able to learn, but he was able to do a mitzvah, so he put himself in a place where he could do a mitzvah. One of the children that had learned in the Beit Midrash exited. What did your Rebbe teach you today? He said this, Kshot, this haps or kuskuta, the bracha is borei pri ha'adama. Chaziz, this immature hay, shakol niyeh bidvaro. The bracha for that is shakol. So that would make sense because one is finished, one is done its full growth, therefore it would be Bar Priya Dhamma. The other one is immature, and therefore the bracha would be Shakon the Ebidvro. Amarlei, Rabbi Zera says back to this child, Adar Abel, Ipcho Mistabra, it should be just the opposite. The opposite is more logical. Hai Ma'ara Komarabe, Chaziz grows from the ground, and therefore it should be a bracha Bar Priya Dhamma. Vahai Ma'avira Komarabe, on the other hand, the Kshot grows, or Kshot grows from the air, not from the ground, and therefore the bracha should be shakol niyebidvro, similar to mushrooms and fungi, which while they grow on the ground, they, according to the Gemara, are not sustained from the ground, they're sustained from the air. But they don't need their roots in the ground necessarily to draw their nourishment, according to the Gemara. So the same thing will be true here by the Kshot. And where it says, Vehilchata kinyokad beirav, wild line in the Gemara, the lacha is like the child, not like Rabbi Zeira. My time, oh, what's the reason? Hi, Gemar Peri. I love Gemar Peri. That's what we said before. One of them is fully ripened, and therefore the bracha is Borei Pri Adama, that's the Kshot. One of them is not fully ripened, which is the Chaziz, and therefore the bracha is Shakol Niyeh Bidvaro. Umayde Gamart, Hi Ma'ara Karabe, V'hai Ma'avira Karabe. What about Rabbi Zero's He'ara? That one of them grows from the ground, one of them is sustained from the air. Lohi, he's wrong. That he's actually wrong about his observation because Kashot nami ma'ara karabi. Kashot also sustains itself from the ground. Da'aka chazina de katlina la lehizmita. And when you take down the bush the thorns or the thorn bush that it grows from, umaita kishota, or really the word probably should be might. Might kishota, the kishota dies, it dries up. So you see that without the bush that it's growing on that's sustained from the ground, the kishota does not survive. And this is why I said before that the kishot might more likely to be this kuskuta rather than the hops. Because the hops are things that clearly grow from the ground. They have roots, they have leaves, green leaves. And it would be hard to understand why Rabbi Zeira would have made that mistake. On the other hand, this classification of kuskuta, which doesn't have chlorophyll, has nothing green on it, and does not have roots or deep roots, it might have seemed to Rabbi Zeira that it didn't grow from the ground. It makes a lot of sense. It doesn't have the green like a vegetation, and it doesn't have roots. So that would make sense that it has a din like mushrooms or fungi, not like a rooted item that would get a bari pri adama. Gemara's conclusion is he's wrong because when you remove the bush that it grows in, then, which is the thing that attaches it to the ground, it's unable to sustain itself. It dries out, which shows you that it is drawing its nourishment from the ground, and that's why you would make a bari pri adama on it. So again, that's why I suggested before that the shoat might be more likely to be this kuskuta rather than hops. All right, now the Gemara moves on. Ubikafniot emir arvin. Is it really true with the unripe dates that you're not allowed to make an eruv? Rav said that there were three things you're allowed to make an eruv with, and two that you were not. The two that you're not, one was chaziz, which the Gemara just challenged and we dealt with, and the other one was these kafniot, which are these unripe dates that he said you cannot make an eruv with. Is that really true? Atanya, have a brighter. Kor is heart of palm. Nikach bekesiv maser. You're allowed to use kesiv maser sheni when you come up to Yerushalayim. Heart of palm is considered to be a food, and you can buy it with kesiv maser sheni. Ve'eno mitamei tumat ochlin. But it's still not considered to be an ochel enough to be mitamei tumat ochlin, to be classified as a food item for tum'ah. Kafniot, the kafniot, these unripened dates. Nikachot bekesiv maser. You're allowed to use maser sheni money to buy them. Umitamot tumat ochlim. And they have a classification of food for tumah. So here, you have a braita that is explicitly saying that kafniot are classified as a food. They're a food both for maaser sheni and for tumah. So how could Rav say kafniot, no good for the eruv? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kor hari ha'etz tochol dvarav. Heart of palm has a din of a branch. It's like wood. For all of its dinim, elish nikach b'kasev maser. It has one exception that you can use maaser sheni money to buy it. V'kaf niyot, and these unripened dates, harihen pri d'chol divrayim. They're like a fruit for all their categorizations. That's tuma and for maaser sheni. Ella, shipturot min maser. You don't have to take off maser from them. So the question the Gemara will ask is, what's the difference between Rav Yehuda and the Tanakama? Because in the end, he's basically saying the same thing. He just starts with what is all-inclusive, and what's the exception? The Tanakhama just gives you the exceptions up front. So Gemara will discuss what's the difference. But for both of them, we see that kafniot have a quality of being a food substance, or a fruit. If that's the case, then why can't you make an eruv from them? Why did Rav object to people using kafniot as an eruv? So Gemara says, hotam b'niskane. Over there, we're talking about these stunted dates. Rashi says that they grow on the male palms. So the male palms, their dates, come to full ripening or full fruition when they are still unripe. They never reach a fully ripened state. As opposed to the female palms, where they could ripen fully, if you picked up the unripened dates, you picked them in a immature state. On the other hand, here on these palms, when you pick the kafniot, that is their full mature state. And therefore, that's why it's classified as a pri, because it's not going to grow anymore. It's not going to become any more ripe than it is now. Where it says, Ihochi, if that's the case, Baha Lema Rabbi Yehuda Pturot Min HaMaser. If that's the case, then why would Rabbi Yehuda in the Breita say that they're Pturot Min HaMaser? If this is their full growth, then they are now considered to be quote-unquote ripe. If they're quote-unquote ripe, why don't you have to take off Maser, Trumot HaMaser, from these unripe dates? This is their full maturity. That's their full maturity. They should be chayav and maser. So that doesn't make sense. Vatanya. Have a bright. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Lo huskru pagei beit yoni. So these stunted figs of beit yoni. Ela the Indian maser bilvad. They are mentioned because they are chayavin in maser. Pagei beit yoni. Vahini de tuvina. Chayavin be maser. These unripened figs of beit yoni. And the hanini are these stunted dates, these unripened dates of tuvina. are chayav in maser because that is their full growth. That is their full maturity. So you see from Rabbi Yehuda explicitly that if something reaches full maturity, even though it's still quote-unquote unripe, nevertheless, you're chayav in maser. So if we're saying that the difference between Rabbi Yehuda's statement of kafdiyot, that is, that they are fruits, that's talking about fully ripened fruits where they're not ripe, and Rav's statement is about fruits that are unripe, but they can still ripen further, that doesn't work. Because if Rav Yehuda is really talking about a case where we're talking about items that have reached full maturity and they're still unripe, he would say chayav maaser. If that's the case, it doesn't fit into the bright, the way he said they were turot mina maaser. Ela l'olam lav v'nischani. Can't be talking about the nischani, these unripened dates. Ul inyan tumat ochlim shiny. But by tumat ochlim, it's different. Meaning kafniyot have to reach full maturity in order to be classified as a pri. Nevertheless, here, when you bring them out in their immature state, and you pick them in their immature state, they have a din of tumat ochlim. And that is because, kedama Rabbi Yochanan, like Rabbi Yochanan says, hol v'roi l'matkana yedea or, you could sweeten them through the fire. Hachanami also be here, hol v'yachol l'matkana yedea or. Since you can sweeten them by heating them, that makes them into a food item. So even though currently, when you pick them in their immature state, they are not edible, they can be made edible by putting them in the fire, roasting them in the fire. So even though there's a step between now and then becoming a food substance, nevertheless, they're classified as food for Tumah, because as Tosfot says, it's a small step, an easy step to get them from being unripe and inedible to an edible state. Because of that, they have a din of Tumat Ochlim. On the other hand, what about the Gavei Maser? And what about the Gavei, the Eruf? Why is the din different over there? So the answer to that is, the Inyan Eruf, we need something that is Chazi B'Hai Shato. We need something that is edible currently. These items are not edible currently. You have to do something to make them edible. So that's why they are disqualified from Eruv. That's what Rav says. Rav says they're disqualified from Eruv because they're in their current state, they are not edible, and therefore it doesn't work. On the other hand, if you heated them in the fire, Rav would say, yes, you could use them after they were sweetened in the fire, but they're currently they're not in that state. And Le'in Maser, that's the same thing, because Maser only comes about by Gemar Pri. When you reach the end of the maturing process, or the making the food item into a food substance, that's when you become chayav in maser. Over here, when you pick them in their immature state, that's not the final stage. There's an additional stage of having to roast them, and they only become chayav in maser after that point. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda says they are turot mina maser. That's why Rav says you can't use them for an eruv, but they still have a din of tumat ochlim. They have a din of tumat ochlim because with a small fix, they become ochel, and therefore they're classified as a food substance. So also by Maaser Sheni, the same din of nikach Maaser Sheni is because you can easily make them into food. I mean, you say heat them up, and then they're food. So that's classified as food for Maaser Sheni, or for using the monies of Maaser Sheni. Now the Gemara wants to know, v'eich itmar de Rabbi Yochanan. Where is the original statement of Rabbi Yochanan made? We say, just like Rabbi Yochanan said, when you heat it up and you sweeten it, it works, so too over here. Where was the original statement of Rabbi Yochanan made? Aha, the Tanya, it was made on this braita. Shkidim hamarim. When we're talking about bitter almonds, tanim chayavim, when they're in small, they're chayav in maser. Gidolim, when they're big, turim, they are patur mina maser. And that is because these bitter almonds, when they are young and immature, are sweet. When they grow to full maturity, that's when they become bitter. They're called bitter almonds because when they fully grow or fully mature, they're bitter. But in their immature state, they are sweet. So people only eat them in their immature state. So if you pick them in that smaller state when they are edible, because they're still sweet at that point, then you're chayav in maser. If you wait, and then if they grow to full maturity where they're bitter, then they're not food anymore, and then you wouldn't be chayav in maser. Like Shaul says, there are the mitukim, the sweet almonds. And the sweet almonds are just the opposite. Gidolim chayavim. When they reach full maturity, you're chayav because that's how they're eaten. They're eaten when they're fully mature, they become sweet. Kitanim, when they're immature, they're patur min maser because they're bitter and they're not edible in that state. So they have opposite properties. The bitter almonds are edible and used when they're small, not when they're fully mature. And the sweet almonds are the other way around. They're only used when they reach full maturity, not when they're immature. And that's why the din is different. Rabbi Shimon b'Rabbi Yossi Omer Mishum Aviv, he says the name of his father, Ze v'ze liftor. That both of them are liftor, are patur, v'amila ze v'ze lichiyuv, or both of them are chayav. Now the both that we are speaking about over here is the marim, the bitter ones. So either he says by the bitter ones, both when they're immature and mature, they are patur. Or he's saying that the bitter ones, whether they're immature or mature, you are chayav. Well, why does that make sense? How could you say zev zev lechayuv lemaychazi? What are they useful for? Bitter almonds are not edible. So why would they be chayav in masrot, according to Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yossi, when they are fully mature, large, bitter almonds? You can't use them for anything. So the answer over there is what Rabbi Yochanan said. Rabbi Yochanan over oil matkana yideawur. Because if you heat them in the fire, you can sweeten them. So these bitter almonds, if they're roasted, they will turn out to be sweet. So that's where the original statement of Rabbi Yochanan was made, on that position of Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yossi. So Amar Rabbi Ilah, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Hora Rabbi Chanina B'tzipor, Kedivir Amar Zev Zev Liftor. He passed like the one who says that it's both statements of Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yossi were made Liftor. The man Amar Zev Zev Lichiyuv, the one who says that both statements are made Lichiyuv by the Marim, the Mai Chazi, what would they use for? Amar Rabbi Yochanan Overoy the Matkana Yideor, because you can sweeten them by the fire. This is the original statement of Rabbi Yochanan. And then we extrapolated or used that over here in our case with regards to the Kafniyot. Amamar, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, now the Gemara goes back to discuss something he had mentioned before, which is that Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kor Hareyu Eitz Lechol Dvarav, Harapam has a din of wood for all issues, except Shnikach B'Kesev Maisir Sheni, that you're allowed to buy it with Kesev Maisir Sheni. When it says, Haino Tanakamo, that's exactly what the Tanakama said. The Tanakama just said it in more words, he says, Kor Nikach B'Kesev Maser, you can buy it with Maisir Sheni, but, Eino Metame Tumat Ochlim, doesn't have a din of Tumat Ochlim. So he said the same thing in different words. So what's the difference between them? Amar baye shlako v'tugno ika menayu. If you cook it heavily, or you fry it, that's the difference between them. The heart of palm is eaten when it's still soft. Palm tree each year has an addition, grows an additional section. That additional section is soft up front. And if it's left there, it hardens into wood. So if you grab it early on, then you get heart of palm, which is soft and edible. If you grab it later on, it's woody. And you can't eat it. It's not edible anymore. Question is, if you grab it in that woody state, and then you cook it heavily, or you fry it, and that makes it edible, what's the din of that item? So that'll be the difference between them. For the Tanakama, that din will be that it's still considered to be ochel, when you've cooked it heavily, and you've fried it. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda has said, Hareyu eitz lechol dvarav. It has a din of wood. That's the default status, and you can't change that status of wood. Except for these exceptions, when you use it for Kesev Maaser Sheni, when you buy it, when it's hard of palm, when it's still soft, and you can use it in that case. So that'll be the difference between them. Is there someone who says that when you cook it heavily, or you fry it, that it doesn't become food? Or if you take a hide, or the placenta, they don't have a din of tumat ochlim because they're not edible, they're not eaten. Or shishlako, if you take the hides and you cook them heavily, so it softens to the point where it's edible, Vishilya, Shachishavaleya, or Shilya, where you intend to eat it, even though most people don't eat it, but if you intend to eat it, Mitamim Tumat Ochlim, then they do attain a status of Ochel. So you see here, cooking heavily, if it makes it edible, that gives it a status of Ochel. El Amar Rova Yikibinayu Brocha. The difference between them is the Brocha. So before, we wanted to suggest the difference between them is the wood, if they have a woody substance already, whether you can change them into an Ochel, where Rabbi Yehuda said no, and the Tanakama says yes. Gemara says, there's nobody who says that you can't change it into a food substance. If you cook it heavily and it makes it into a food substance, everybody would agree that it is a food item. So what's the nafkamina between them? So Rava suggests here the brocha is the difference between them. What bracha do you make on heart of palm? So Rav Yehuda says you make the bracha borei pri adama. Shmuel says you make a shakol niyeh bidvaro. So our brayta will have the same thing. Rabbi Yehuda and the Braita will say it's shakol ne'ebid v'ro, because it's wood. So that's why you make a shakol on it. And the Tanakam will say make a bari pri adama, because it derives from the tree. It derives from the something that grows on the ground. Yehuda amar bari pri adama uchlohu, because it's ochel. If it's ochel, then it's a dinner of bari pri adama. Shmuel amar shakol ne'ebid v'ro, kevin shel sof lakshot. Because in the end, it's going to turn into wood. If you don't catch it early on, when it's soft, it's going to turn into wood. Lo mevachin iluyei bari pri adama. Therefore, you don't make a bracha on it, a bari pri adama. Amalei Shmuel Rabbi Yehuda. So Shmuel says to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says Talmid, Rabbi Yehuda, shinina, tavatech mistabro. Shinina, again, either it means big teeth or the sharp one. Like you, it makes sense. Daha, snow, a radish. So folak shot. In the end, if you leave a radish in the ground, it hardens. Murechin alei borei pri adama. The bracha that we make on radish when you eat it is borei pri adama. The Gemara says lohi. The comparison is not good because snon not the inche adaita de pugla. When people plant radishes, they intend to pick them when they are still soft. That's why they plant the radishes. Dikla no not the inche adaita de pugla. When people plant palm trees, they're not planting it for the heart of palm. They're only planting it for the dates or the other production from the palm tree. And therefore, even though Shmuel praised Rabbi Yehuda's position, nevertheless, Hilchot Dekavet Eri Shmuel. The halacha is like Shmuel, that the bracha is, Shalkon Yeh Bidvaro. When we did his Gemara in Brachot, I mentioned that today where they might grow palms commercially to make heart of palm, that might be a difference. The Gemara's whole premise is that people don't plant palms for heart of palm. And that's why it's Shalkon. But if people are planting palms today for heart of palm, maybe the bracha, or the likelihood is that the bracha should be Bori Pi Adama, because that is the intent of the planter, is to get the heart of palm out. Gufa, another thing we're going to go back to. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Kshot, V'chaziz Marvin Ben. These Kshot and Chaziz you're allowed to use for an Eruv. Umivarchim Aleim Bori Pi Adama, and you make a Bori Pi Adama. Kshot Begama. How much Kshot do you have to use to make it into an Eruv? We know that an Eruv requires Shtei Si'udot. What is the quantity of kshot that you need in order to be shtei seudot? Kedam rechiyok, melo ayad, a handful. Achanamik, melo ayad, just like he said there, melo ayad over here also means a handful. Chaziz bikama, the immature hay, how much do you need in order to be shtei seudot? Amarav or tupia bayisach, amarav, kemlo ozilta de ikare. It's like a bundle of the farmers. The normal bundle size of the farmers, that's what you need. Amarav chilkia bartupia, ma'arvin bikalyo. You're allowed to use it for an Eruv Kalya. Kalya is ashes of the alkaline. It was burnt up, and then the ashes were used in order to be added to, whether it's soaps or other things, other items. It was used in that manner. Mar says, but Kalya Sakhadatchot, that's not an edible item. That's something that's used as an additive, an herb, in some way. Ela biyarka de kalya. It's not the kalya itself, but rather the yarka, the green, the herb part of the kalya, that can be used for an eruv. How much you have to use? Amar Rav Chiyo k'mlo ayad. That you have to use a handful. This is the original statement of Rav Chiyo, that m'lo ayad, when we did before, said, just like there, it's m'lo ayad, so to over here, it's m'lo ayad. Rav Yirmiyah nafik l'kiraito. Vir went out. According to Rashi, it says that he went out to the kfarim, out to the villages, to see how his fields were doing. In other places, the word kiryah is used to mean the city, or the main area. Bominei, they asked of him, ma'ud arei bepulin lachim. Can he use moist legumes, moist beans, as an eruv? Lo habibiyote. He didn't have the answer. Kiyat le beit midrashah, when he reached the beit midrash, amrulei, they gave him the answer, achi amar rabbi anai, me'arvin bepulin lachim. You can use moist beans as your eruv. Vikama. How much can you use? Amar b'chiyo kmo ayad. Again, the amount that is a handful will be sufficient to be for shtei seudot. Amar Rav Humnuna, me'arvin b'tradin, chayin. You can use, now tered today is spinach, but here in the Gemara, tradin is beets. Which is, you're allowed to use raw beets for an eruv. Ini, is that really true? Amar Rav Chiska, silka chayo. So here again, you see that they're comparing tered and selek. Selek is beets. Raw beets, or katio, gavra chayo. They kill a healthy individual. Raw beets kill even healthy people, so you shouldn't be eating them. So then why can they, are they qualified to be in a roof? Where it says, I will be bushel below bushel. When are they problematic is when they're half cooked. That's when they're problematic. Fully cooked is fine, fully raw is fine. Half cooked, that's where they cause a problem. Igdamre, Amrav Amnuna, Imarvin Bitradin Chayin, you're not allowed to use these unripened, these raw beets. Damrav Chiska, Silka Chaya, Katul Gavra Chaya. Because raw beets kill even healthy people. We see that people eat them and they don't die. Hotam bebashil of lo bashil. Rav Amnuna's statement that you're not allowed to make an eruv with them and that they are problematic is when they're half cooked. But raw beets are fine, cooked beets are fine. When they're in the in-between stage, that's when they're problematic. That's when they cannot be used for an eruv and that's when they're dangerous to be eaten. Okay, we'll stop over here.